delighted to have John Kulbicki of Dartmouth College, who will be talking about images, maps, and decompositionality.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Alex, for organizing and having me out. It's great to be here to talk about this with a really cool group to actually bounce some ideas off of. The title, Paul Taylor, art historian, friend of mine, introduced me to the work of Jeroen Stumpel, who said in a paper, I thought this was a really funny remark, he wanted to talk about pictorial composition in 15th century Italy, and he didn't know what to call it, right? And he said, you know, I'd call it deconstruction if it didn't sound so modish, and decomposition if it didn't sound so morbid, right? And I went for both, morbid and modish, with decompositionality. So I want to talk about, at some point, how we can and can't break pictures down into their relevant parts, right? And why that matters for a question about propositionality, right? Are pictures the kinds of things that express propositions? What's the bar, right? And one thing that I've noticed in recent work, I'm going to have to stand up at some point soon because this feels so stupid, but it's really fun. So apologies to Martin who's trying to record this, when we think about pictures, we think, yeah, they're different kinds of representations than, say, linguistic representations, but yes, of course, they have accuracy conditions. I mean, we can say that they have accuracy conditions, and sometimes we can even say, oh, at least we think so, we can say, yeah, they're true or they're false, right? And when you think about whether there's a bar for propositionality, is a representation going to be propositional? I mean, there are low bars, which are like, you know, oh, they have accuracy conditions. That's sort of easy. Everybody, they're representations, after all. They have contents. You can map a content onto a state of affairs and say it's accurate or inaccurate. You might even be able to go for a middle bar kind of thing and say it could be true or false, right? And so, you know, one of Tim Crane's worries about images is that they can't be true or false. He thinks they could just be accurate, right? They can't be true or false. And then Alex, for example, raises some worries about this. And so in a sense, Alex goes for like a middle bar propositionality kind of thing. And then in some other work, actually, you know, Liz, you're interested in a high bar for propositionality, right? And what would that look like and stuff like that, right? So I'm going to talk about that. And the way I decided to try to move into this is by thinking about compositionality. So how pictures depend, and other kinds of representations depend on their parts, right? And how that manner of dependence might give us some purchase on what it would mean to say pictures have a propositional or non-propositional content. Another reason I'm doing it this way is because it can start to, like, if you are worried about pictures and propositions, right? Like I said, there are different bars, but then you could also worry that there's this thing we're doing. We're saying they have propositional content, but what's the sort of cash value of that, right? What's the value in saying that, right? It might be that we can honor them by saying they have propositional content, but unless that helps us understand, at least from my perspective, unless it helps us understand the varieties of representation and how we use them and everything else, it's not a very helpful thing to say. So I'm sort of, you know, I don't think it's trivial, right, to say that they have propositional content. I just worry that there's a certain sense in which it might not be the most useful thing unless we do it in the right way, so I'm going to try to do it in the right way. Okay, so here, and I'm not sure I succeed, right? So that's another thing. I'm not totally comfortable with where I end this thing. Although I hope it's a fun, you know, ride for you. So here's a statement of compositionality that I gave you. I figured I want to give a statement just not by say the other folks I'll be talking about, by a sort of linguist, philosopher of language, right? So. The meaning of an this is a standard, anybody would probably recite something similar to this at this point, right? But the meaning of an expression is a function of the meanings of its parts and of the way in which they're syntactically combined, right? That's Barbara Partee. And it's just from her collection of essays on semantic compositionality and compositionality generally. The point of compositionality, when it comes up in, say, the philosophy of mind in particular, but also in the philosophy of language, one of the things it does is because things are compositional, we can explain something else, right? And because thoughts are structured in a compositional way, we can explain that they're systematic and productive. There's this phenomenon, right? And I'm not going to give you a detailed gloss on what systematicity and productivity are. We can argue about that actually if you wish later. But productivity is sort of, you know, this thought that, well, we could have as many thoughts as we'd like, right? We just have many, many thoughts. And if you think about it more linguistically, you can generate as many sentences as you like. You just keep putting the things together, right? They're quite productive. And I'm not sure that's the way I'd like to think of my productivity sometimes, but it feels that way. You're just adding sentences to things. And systematicity is harder to gloss without feeling guilty, but it's But it's the claim that, you know, we have these sort of parts of expressions, right, that show up, and the contribution that they make to the many expressions in which they show up is actually fairly uniform, right? There's something systematic about the way that the parts of expressions contribute to their meanings as a whole. And this is, you know, and so if it's true, for example, that the meaning of an expression, so in language, turns out to be a function of the meanings of its parts and the ways in which they're syntactically combined, then we can get some sense of what systematicity is, what productivity is, and compositionality then could play this role in sort of making sense out of how, say, thought or something like that is systematic and productive, how language is systematic and productive, right? The parts in question, though, right, the parts have to be meaningful, right, somehow, right? This is just simple. I want to say, and I'll say more about this, but they have to be separable, and I think it's important to remember that when we're thinking about compositionality, they have to be, it has to be possible in general for the parts to be complex, right? So, you know, this is a recursive idea, but the idea is supposed to be that I've got a very complex expression, and I can break it down into parts, and some of those parts that I break it down into are going to be complex, and those complex parts can themselves be broken down into simpler and simpler parts, right? Okay, they're possibly complex, but they're also separable. Okay, and what does separability amount to? Because I think this is really important when you're thinking about compositionality in relation to systematicity and productivity, and it will turn out later in relation to propositionality, right? Okay, separable parts are the kinds of things that can occur sort of piecemeal in multiple complex expressions, right? And so the complexity, I mean, there is going to be a semantic complexity to these expressions, but the complexity I have in mind here in the separability is syntactic, right? The parts are the kinds of things that can be syntactically put together in different ways, right? So I could take this part and syntactically put it together with other kinds of parts to get you a different complex expression, which is going to be meaningful in its own way, perhaps, right? That's what I have in mind when it comes to separable parts. I think it's going to matter for thinking about how images generally and maps and some other kinds of representations are different from linguistic representations. And it's a well-known line of thought. I'll confess that I'm fonder of this conclusion than any arguments demand that I be, right? But it's and it's a well-known sort of view in the philosophy of mind, associated most closely with Jerry Fodor and Ernie Lepore, that if you think about, say, concepts or lexemes, you try to break things down into their simplest, sort of, as it were, syntactic parts, right? Those parts, if you try to make those parts semantically very complex, right, it's very hard to get them to compose. Okay, so I'm not going to rehearse all of those arguments, but the thought is supposed to be that concepts, on their view, concepts or lexemes, they're semantically, they're atoms, right? And for Fodor and Lepore, that means they're actually just picking out classes of things, right? The most you could say about them in terms of their meaning is that they capture an extension or something like that, right? That's about all you can do. They aren't definitions, they're not prototypes, right? And their standard go-to example is pet fish. And there are lots of reasons for actually wanting to be a semantic atomist, I think. This is one reason. But, you know, if you think concepts are prototypes and there's, you know, the concept of a pet is understood as a prototype in terms of prototypical pets, and things get farther away from it. That's how they count as pets. And fish, you know, whatever. A prototypical fish and a prototypical pet. There's a prototypical pet fish, but I don't know how you get a prototypical pet fish out of a prototypical pet and a prototypical fish. Okay? Meaning, and it's that's not much of an argument, actually. It's like, I don't know how, but yeah, I don't, right? And it's hard to see how they're supposed to compose generally, right? I'm going to come back to this because it turns out to be interesting when we have images and maps and other things like that on the table. But one consequence of this that I want you to keep in mind, this will help see why it matters later, is that take two concepts that we all know, that we're all familiar with and we can all use, and they're very simple, right? So red and scarlet. Okay, these are both, you know, concepts for colors, right, in a certain sense of the word, right? But for those two, for Fodor and Lepore, for example, it's possible to have either concept without having the other, right? So it's not it's not one of the possession conditions on scarlet that you have the concept of red for them. Likewise, conversely. But it's also, I mean, in some sense impossible, not psychologically plausible, not likely, not any of this, but it's possible that you could have both of those concepts, scarlet and red, and not have much knowledge about how they relate to one another, right? That's, and that's, it, it's implausible that that's, if I'm saying that's a psychologically plausible state of affairs, right? But the idea about it being possible just follows from the fact that they're supposed to be semantic atoms, okay? And so I should be able to possess these things that actually pick out different things and different classes of things in the world, even though the classes, one is included properly within the other, I should be able to have these concepts and not realize, as it were, right, in a first-person way, that they're related in this way. And I'm flagging that as a line of thought that's prominent because, well, I'll come back to it, but it's not, for now, you can forget that, we're going to come back to it. What I want to do is start to ask something about pictures and images and sort of what, and maps actually, because they're a little bit different, what are the ways in which they might be compositional, right? So the way, you know, if they're going to satisfy this claim that the meaning of an expression is a function of the meaning of its parts and the ways in which they're syntactically combined, and we have an image, so you could just keep a picture in mind if you like, but I'm happy to be more, you know, small-c Catholic about this. I mean, lots of things that we call images you could have in mind when we're thinking about this. And let's just say, I mean, here's a way to think about it. I want to know, because I'm worried about syntactic combination, I want to know what the smallest separable parts are, right? As it were, the simplest. They don't have to be small. You know what I mean? They're typically small, but they got to be simple. What are the simplest separable parts? Let's call them pixels, right? Because you all know what that means, sort of. I'm not sure I know what that means, but they're simple in that they're, you know, they don't have to be points, right? I'm not suggesting that a pixel has to be some kind of mathematical point. I'm not even suggesting it has to be any size in particular, but we'll get clear on exactly what they're supposed to be, but they're the smallest separable parts. So I could break a picture apart and what I've got is a bunch of pixels if I break it all the way apart, right? And the way we combine pixels is by connecting them. Okay, so just a suggestion, right? So we just, you know, you take two pixels and you connect them, okay? The complex but separable parts of an image, right? So they're easy to sort of understand. I mean, those things are just going to be sort of connected collections of pixels, right? So I could cut a picture in half down the middle. I could cut it into quarters. I could make pizza slices out of it. I could break it up into lots of little parts, right? And they'll all be complex separable parts, right? That's at least the thought. And, you know, in pictures, the semantic significance of this sort of thing, connection, is going to vary, right? Now, you all have a picture in mind, presumably, so I mean, you know, one of these or whatever, I don't know, but you've got pictures in mind, so you're going to immediately think spatially, and that's fine. Some pictures capture something quite minimal about connectedness, so topological features of a scene, you might think. Some images, at least, will do that, right? Some might capture a richer set of spatial relations, and they're going to vary amongst, say, axonometric projection systems, linear projection systems, other kinds of odd projection systems, even the curvy ones, they might vary, right? So there are going to be lots of ways of assigning a kind of semantic significance to connection. And I even think there are non-spatial cases of connection. So, I mean, I'm thinking about what we usually think of as the spatial dimensions as being these kind of, you know, independent dimensions, right, along which we could think about an image. It doesn't need to be spatial exactly, but usually in paradigm cases it will be. And it's important, this is part of what it is to be a pixel, you only get spatial relations if you're thinking spatially. The only time a spatial relation shows up in a picture is when you have more than one maximally simple part, right? So when you put two pixels together, then you can get spatial relations between things. One pixel has no interesting spatial significance whatsoever, right? So it might be big, but it's not telling you about anything that's happening in there, as it were. That's sort of part of the point. Now, that's why I'd say they're the simplest sort of separable parts. I could break the picture up into these things and then run with them, right? So I know this is sort of a weird way of breaking things up, but I hope it's useful. When we think about pixels sort of syntactically, so I've told you, we've got these syntactic parts. What do we do with them? Well, in ordinary pictures, you know what we do? We just connect a color to them, actually, right? I mean, this is really simple. They've got one sort of feature, right? And it's going to be perhaps a determinate shade of color. Perhaps it's one of maybe five colors, if that's all you're willing to give yourself, right? But it's just locating a feature there. One thing I think that's really interesting and different about maps, all right, and we can talk about this too, but is that in maps, actually, you could do a lot more. In maps, when you have the smallest regions that matter, you could layer lots of features on top. And it's not to say And it's important not to confuse this with the practical matter. Like, if I've got a little patch of canvas, all I can do is pop a color on there. I can't do much else. But the idea is supposed to be, when we're thinking about representations in their syntactic structure, we can say of a region of a map that it represents a region that's coded as being mountainous, semi-arid, right? You know what I mean? And all of these features, because it has a collection of features. Even though the small little pixel might just be a uniform, as a matter of fact, uniform shade of color, right? We have all of these conventions for saying that region of the map indicates it's in a mountainous area, it indicates that it's semi-arid, right? It indicates that it's land and not sea, and so on, right? And so I guess if it's semi-arid, it's land. You can combine them in many interesting ways. And there are lots of maps that indicate things about the provenance of the land, right? How old is the land? You know, when was the last time it was covered by other things and everything else? So in maps, things get actually much more complicated and interesting. But in pictures, we're just popping colors onto pixels. I know this sounds simple, but I think it is simple. The semantic significance of these pixels, though, now I'm thinking about images generally, right? In normal pictures, you might think the semantic significance of a color being on a pixel is that it's representing some kind of color. Maybe it's representing some abstract kind of chromatic feature. That's fine, but it's representing something typically chromatic. But this varies a lot across images, right? Colors on a weather map represent intensities, and colors on an fMRI represent sort of other kinds of things going on, and colors on different maps represent different things, for example. So it could represent anything you like, pretty much. And the idea is supposed to be that you have this array. Typically, it's just a two-dimensional array. And you've placed features at all the pixels, right? And this gives you something like a decomposition, right, of the picture into its separable parts, right? All of those different pixels. So when Fodor tried to say, what's the compositional principle at work in pictures, he was trying to figure out, is there a notion of representation that's not going to look linguistic, right? But nevertheless, is going to be compositional. He actually thinks it is. Most people tend to think pictures are compositional, right? But if there is a compositional principle at work, what is it? He calls it the picture principle. And he says it here. He says, look, if P is a picture of X, then separable parts of P are pictures of, let's say, contiguous parts of X. I mean, I think that that's what he had in mind, right? And remember, he said this because he wants compositionality to explain certain things, right? And when we do it with concepts, when we do it with language, we're interested in explaining sort of how a meaningful expression comes to have the sort of big, as it were, meaning it has based on its meaningful as moving parts. And his principle suggested that. Now, he also, for those of you who know it, suggested that this is strange because there's no privileged, interesting, or unique way of decomposing a picture, right? He said you could cut it in half lengthwise. You could, I guess this is lengthwise. You could cut it in half the other way. You could cut it up into lots of different parts. And there's no privileged way of doing it. Sure, you can cut a lot of sentences up in a number of ways too, but the question is whether you've cut it up into its simple parts, right? And a sentence can be broken up into lots of different phrases, right? And a picture can be broken up into lots of different, you know, complex parts. But there is a way of breaking it up, if you think about pixels being the minimally spatially significant parts of them, there is a way of breaking it up uniquely. It's just a big pain in the behind to try to do that, and no, it's not going to be the most useful thing for you to do in general, but at least they admit of this kind of decomposition into their parts, you might think, right? And so I think images compose, right, in this general sense of image that I've been playing around with. And they've got, actually, they might have a unique decomposition into their simplest parts, okay? That's really different than Fodor said it was, but that's what his principle commits him to, I think. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So if images, and so here's one more feature that he thinks is interesting. He points out, look, here's the thing about that makes these images different. The principle of syntactic combination is really simple, and he says homogeneous, right? It's connection. At least that's the way I'm putting it, right? So all you can do with these parts is connect them. That's it. So whenever you break it up, you're breaking it up along the lines of connection, right? There's no other interesting. You're not breaking it up into noun phrases, verb phrases, other kinds of modifiers, and so on. It doesn't work like language that way. We don't have an interesting grammar for pictures, but that's not to say that we don't have something that vaguely might look grammatical. It's just kind of simple. So you might just call it something that's not grammatical. You might not call it grammar, right? It just doesn't have enough complexity to it. Okay. So given that way of breaking up pictures, I want to ask a question. I'm settling into this chair. I kind of like it. I was going to get up and walk around, but I don't know. So given this way we've got of breaking up pictures, right? What are we supposed to say about the pixels? I want to ask some slightly strange questions about the smallest separable parts of pictures, because I think this is going to be very helpful. For example, are pixels semantically complex? Right? Okay. We can ask this about lexemes too. Are lexemes semantically complex? Is our best account of them that they're semantically rich in one way or another, or not? Here's one way of saying no. And this is I think this is actually something a lot of you would find tempting. But this is Richard Heck's way of saying no. I'm not sure that makes it more or less tempting for you. But they represent determinate shades of color. So when he's discussing, and by the way, a lot of what I'm saying, it's sort of very easy to fly between like artifacts and mental representations and everything else. And I think that should be okay, because I think representation is a concept that's supposed to transcend these kinds of categories, right? Anyway, I could be wrong about that, but I'm going to be sliding back and forth. What Heck does is compare mental images to maps, okay, which is probably not the best thing, because he doesn't have any thoughts whatsoever about what makes maps different from any other kinds of images. But he said they're maps. Right, and he asks this question about perception. So this is now a philosophy of perception question, but it's going to relate to artifact images too. He says, I see the clear blue sky and the deep blue sea. Right, those are two perceptual. I think those are actually his example, and those are two shades of blue that I see. And he says, I see no reason to think there's anything that they have in common. Those kinds of perceptual states, right? Okay, this is a very Lockean point, right? I mean, Locke would have loved this and then realized this is a pain because, like, it's hard to be Locke because, the idea is supposed to be, these are simple, right? All they do semantically, right, perceptually, is it picks out a very specific shade of color in the sky case, and all you're doing is picking out a very specific shade of color in the deep blue sea case, and there's nothing that those representations themselves semantically have to have in common. They just pick out determinate shades. Okay, and that's quite atomistic for Locke, right? All of our experiences of different colors are simple ideas. And it was important to him that they were simple ideas because you have to build up complex ideas and they better be simple at the bottom. But the trick, the difficult thing with being an empiricist in the Lockean sort of way is it really seems like the ideas of the clear blue sky and the deep blue sea have something in common, like they're blue, right? But for Heck, a lot of you actually might believe this too, so this is cool, I'm cool with this, but I mean, I don't agree. He says, look, there. Nothing has ever looked blue to anyone in a certain sense of the word, right? Okay? In another sense of the word, sure, things look blue to people all the time. But in a very important sense, it's not true. And you might think this is true for, say, pictures. If pictures are representing colors, what the individual pixels do when I locate a color there is it says, there's something out there with this specific shade of color, or it might be a more abstract chromatic feature, but there's no interesting internal relations between these different kinds of colors that I could locate at all these different places. Okay. Let me give you two reasons for maybe not going Heck's way. Okay. One of them is just from maps. Okay. I said earlier, one cool thing about maps is that they can layer a lot of different syntactic features at a pixel, right? So you could say of one region with all of these different kinds of features that you can place there, that it's arid, arid if you want now, and mountainous, and so on and so forth, right? And I can populated, right? Okay. So a city marker on a map is not incompatible with marking it as being above sea level, like on land, right? Or in an arid region, right? So we can put all these things together. And that's a kind of syntactic complexity. Semantic. Anyway, they're related, but it's a semantic complexity because what the map is telling me, right, is that all of these things are there at once, right? And you might, and so this is an interesting, fact about maps. You might think this is true about pictures. I'm not completely convinced about pictures. Are there some images, broadly speaking? Yeah, there are things sort of between maps and, say, ordinary pictures that I think might layer these things too. So that's a kind of semantic complexity that's there. The other one is just something that I have a very strong intuition about this, and I'm inviting you to share it, but like I said, many of you probably agree with Heck. I tend to think that when images sort of pick things out as sort of scarlet or something like that, they're also, in very much the same way, picking them out as being red. and picking them out as having colors, right? I think those kinds of interpretations are, as it were, on the surface of a picture. They're not inferences away from scarlet, right? I think pictures represent things as being scarlet and red and colored all at once, right? One pixel, you know, if it's that kind of scarlet one, it's representing lots of features between scarlet at the most sort of determinate level and something rather vague at the most indeterminate level. But I think it tends to do that. It's a semantic kind of complexity. I also think, by the way, that pictures do this for spatial features. We have to combine pixels to get any kind of spatial features going, right? But a picture that represents something as square is also going to represent it as quadrilateral, right? I tend to think that there's that kind of semantic complexity built into pictures spatially as well as we've been talking chromatically, right? Now, I'm not confident that this happens with every example of images, and it certainly doesn't happen with all the maps, right? We can certainly design maps that don't work this way. But I'm suggesting that this is a kind of semantic complexity that's present in pictures. And if you really disagree, I want to hear, because I'm interested in this. This seems obvious to me, but then Heck said it seemed obvious to him, this other thing, and at least one other person, Michael Tao, also said that. He said it was completely obvious that perceptual states never pick out anything but very specific shades of color. And I think that's completely nuts. But these are intuitions I'm inviting you to share. Let me try to give you some motivation for it, right? So let's ask this very strange question, a question that shouldn't make a lot of sense, right? Are the pixels syntactically complex? Okay, that should sound like a bad question because I told you the pixels were the simplest separable parts, right? And we're worried about syntactic combination, right? So that sounds like a bad thing to say. Obviously, they're not syntactically complex. But let's think about the maps again, right? So a map can have a marker for land, for arid mountainous region, for a city and some roads, right? And they can all occupy, as it were, the same pixel, right? I'm not saying you could draw a map and make that obvious, right? I mean, that's not what I'm saying. But certainly when we think about the structure of a map, we can do this. Now, is that syntactic complexity of a pixel, okay? In a certain sense, it's not separable, right? I can imagine a pixel which just has a marker for arid land, one which just has a marker for a city, one which just has a marker for a road, right, and so on. I could imagine separate pixels having all of these. But I can't take this one pixel, as it were, and sort of break it up into its parts, right? I mean, I can just sort of, as it were, by a process of abstraction, think about certain of its syntactic features independent of the others, right? I could think about the road marker aspect independent of the land marker aspect, and so on, right? So is that separability? I don't, not in the sense that would be relevant to explaining, I think, certain features of the compositional structure of a thing. I can't really pull them apart, but it is going to be explanatorily relevant for understanding what's going on in a map. Okay, that's one reason to think pixels are syntactically kind of complex. I want to give you another slightly cooler reason. This is supposed to, like I said, this implausible thing, although I like it, about images. They represent scarlet and red and colored all at once, right? They represent square and quadrilateral all at once. I actually think they have, as it were, and I should have said, you know, the layering thing, this comes up in different ways in people like Liz's work and Michael Rescorla's work, right? I think it's true. Cassati and Varzi, who have the first semantics for maps, try to avoid that, but they think it's true, right? And so on. So that's there. But let's think about images. I actually think, let's say you have a picture of something that's scarlet, right? That picture is, and it's representing the scarlet thing by being scarlet. This is a toy example, but, you know, run with me here. The picture also is red, right? Okay, and the picture also is sort of chromatically, it has a color to it, right? Say it's not without hue, for example, or something like that. These are all things that are at some remove from the most specific color the picture happens to be, but they're features, just like the other features of the map. You know how I could focus on the land marker thing and try to bracket worries about roads and other things like that, and I could focus on the redness and ignore the scarletness, but also ignore, if I wish, the sort of aspect of it being colored. In fact, it's a standard view about a sort of that I could think a thought about something being red without thinking a thought that it's scarlet, or even without thinking the thought that it has a color, right? I could, so semantically, at least linguistically, right, it seems like I could break these things up. But what we get in the picture is not just a defensible intuition that they represent these features across levels of abstraction, we actually find something in the syntax that tracks the different features across the levels of abstraction, right? So the pixel might have a color, but it has a color. It's red, it's scarlet, it's a specific shade and brightness of scarlet, right? It's got all of those features. These are just abstractions, right? They're logically related in a certain sense, they're constitutively related to one another, but they're all there, and they're the kinds of things I could focus on as a consumer of a representation. So the intuition that I have that I'm asking you to share about the semantics being complicated, I think finds a kind of reflection in the syntax. There's a kind of, what I want to say, it's an articulate semantic complexity, right? I can't decompose this. I can't break it up into parts. I can't find, just give me a red pixel. You mean you want the scarlet one? No, not the scarlet. I just want it red. Can it be crimson? No, it can't be crimson. It has to just be red. You can't get that pixel, right? Okay, that's not going to happen. Okay, so there's a profound kind of inseparability here, right? Even though so that's pretty profound, but that's not the same. That's not the same thing as saying that it's not syntactically relevant, right? And I actually think this feature of images plays a big role, and I've talked about this elsewhere. So, I mean, Chris said I was maybe giving the same talk. It's not the same talk, but it's similar. But, I mean, it's really important for understanding what makes images distinctive, I think, that they can do this. Okay. It's also interesting to note that this kind of, if they are semantically complex in this way, there's no worries about composition. This kind of semantic complexity raises no troubles about composition, right? And I think it's because of how simple the other rules of, the real rules of composition in pictures are. They're just connection, right? So you can afford a lot of semantic complexity in your smallest separable parts without running into worries about, well, how do I do pet fish? Because pictures don't do pet fish in a certain sense of the word, right? So there's something very semantically rich and complex about the simplest separable parts of pictures, but that's not actually a problem in the way that it might be. I'm not saying we have to agree with Fodor and Lepore, but in the way that it might be if you tried to give an account of concepts or lexemes as being semantically quite rich, right? This is interesting, I think. Now, I actually think, so let's go back, so the idea here is supposed to be, all right, just let me quickly review and then I'll talk about Heck again, because I think this is an important thing that he says, which is surprising because he doesn't come down in the right place on some other things. But here's the picture, is that we have these syntactically movable things, as it were, the separable parts. And if what we're worried about is compositionality, right, putting things together, right, to make bigger ones, they should be the things we focus on. Now, it turns out when we focus on them, they look kind of interesting. They only combine in very simple ways. We connect them. But they also turn out to be semantically, and it turns out, so semantically complex in an articulate way. I'm not sure. I've elsewhere called this syntactically complex. I think it's syntactically marked. I mean, it depends on what you mean by syntax. But I think that there's a sense in which these things are richly complex, that tracks the way in which they're semantically complex, right? And part of the this is important because part of the motivation for thinking about kinds of representation, right? So, let's say you're a philosopher of mind and you want to know, oh, are there images in the head in some interesting sense of the word? Is there a language of thought, right? And all this stuff. Why are you asking this question, right? It's because you're interested in whether they have a structure that lets them do the things that they do in a certain way. We want to understand how we do what we do, for example, and understanding, for example, how thoughts or parts of language are compositional can help us really get some purchase on that. And you'd think if I came up with another way of thinking about composition, right, that would help me too. And Heck thinks this. I mean, Heck and Fodor, they both think that pictures are compositional, but they think they're homogeneously sort of syntactic, so that it's just about, they wouldn't call it this, but I mean, they think it's just about connections, right? And then there are pixels, and as I said, Heck thinks the pixels are sort of semantically quite simple, okay? But their goal is to say, yeah, what makes these representations interestingly different in how they work is because they're syntactically homogeneous, you could do certain things with them, you can't do other things with them, and so on. And here's Heck's quote. He says, we should instead, he actually makes a very strong claim about content here. I don't know if I want to follow him there, but he says, we should instead regard the content of a mental state as encoding not just what it represents, but also how it represents it. I'm out of that, sorry. That is, as encoding S's compositional structure. End quote. So Heck goes so far as to say, what I actually think we should do if we're trying to think about kinds of mental states and content, kinds of content, is we should be sensitive to the compositional structure of the representations we have in mind. Why? He thinks we need to do that because it's only by doing that that we can understand how the representations do what they're supposed to do, right? How they act differently, in his case, in one's psychological economy, right? If we're worried about artifacts, which he could have been writing about artifacts, then we're interested in how these artifacts can be used for different kinds of purposes by us, right? And, you know, how we can use them differently based on how they're put together. But I want to suggest his focus there in that quote on compositional structure is perhaps a mistake, right? So compositional structure, the separability of parts, is an important aspect of what makes representations causally interesting, okay? But causal efficacy doesn't require that kind of separability, right? The idea is supposed to be, look, I've tried to suggest that the pixels, this is admittedly quite abstract, the pixels aren't just semantically complex, right? Lexemes, by the way, if they are semantically complex, nobody thinks they've got any interestingly articulate sort of syntactic complexity going on. We should think about that. But the pixels, they're semantically complex, and the way in which they are is marked in the syntax, even though it's in an inseparable way. These things, an image can do things that it couldn't do, right, because of this syntactic complexity. Why? Well, because if I'm interested in just finding the red things out there, right, I can set myself up to be causally sensitive to the red stuff. It doesn't matter whether it's scarlet or crimson or whatever. And by that act of abstraction, I'm only interested in the red stuff, right, which I've affected on the representation itself, right? I've managed to make an abstraction over the contents of the representation and thereby sort of look for the red things, the red represented things, right? So the fact that, so it's not just a sort of interesting fact about images that they have a semantic complexity that has to deal with levels of abstraction. It's not even just interested that that's tracked, in a sense, by the syntax. But in the way that that's done, it allows you to be causally sensitive to many different aspects of what the thing represents, right? In a quite immediate fashion, right? It's not an inference, okay? So I don't think compositional structure, right, when we think about it, say, in language or in the language of thought, that's not necessarily the last word in explaining what makes a kind of representation interesting. So it's tempting to think what makes representations interesting is how they have parts and how those parts are put together, because that affects what they do. Yes, but you're focusing on parts that are separable, and that's great. But it turns out that images have these inseparable parts that actually affect their own structure, their internal structure, which can't be teased apart necessarily, right? You can't have something that's just red and something that's just a color and something that's just scarlet but not red. You know, you can't do that. But even so, the way that these things work to represent what they do lets us do things with them that we can't do with other representations, right? Which is make fairly immediate abstractions over their content by abstracting over their syntactic features. Okay, that's special, as far as I can tell. So let's, with that in mind, let's think about propositionality, right? Because I mentioned at the beginning that you can have a very low bar for propositionality. You think, well, as long as I can get accuracy conditions in there, it's good enough. Or a middle bar, as long as I can get truth conditions in there, it might be good enough. Or maybe an even higher bar. And I said, you know, Liz has talked a bit about higher bars for propositionality. And I mean, I don't know how this exactly engages with Liz's developed view. He's still thinking it through. But here's a thought. Propositional systems, these systems that we have in mind as sort of the paradigm, like maybe articulate thought, maybe, you know, language, these kinds of things, those systems' operations are defined only over separable parts. So what kind, the notion of an operation and a separable part are going to be mutually sort of related, right? The idea is you've got a propositional system. What makes it propositional is that you can do certain things. There are certain rules for, say, syntactic combination and everything else that you can make work, right? And so maybe that's what it is to be a propositional system. All of these systems can sort of express sort of, not express, I don't know if they can express proposition. They can give us accuracy conditions, they could do lots of things, but when we call them propositional, it's not just that they could be true or false, it's that they have a certain kind of built-in sort of structure, and it's really a kind of separability, right? That's going to be prerequisite for an operation being defined over something in one of these systems, right? Or to put it differently, the operations that matter are the ones that can be defined over separable parts. They're like chess pieces, right? I mean, anything can be a chess piece, but you know, the rules sort of define what it is to be a chess piece, but they also place constraints on what the chess pieces can be like, right? And everything else, right? I can make this a pawn, but I can't make it a pawn and a queen at once. I can't play that game. So that's a thought about propositionality, perhaps. And then it turns out that in these other kinds of representation, the maps, the images, the pictures, right? It might be that having articulate inseparable parts is essential, right, to understanding them, right? So those operations, the operations that are of interest and distinctive of images, right, and understanding them, they're the kinds of things that are going to be defined over syntactically articulate yet inseparable features of the representations in question, right? I'm not actually claiming that this maps perfectly onto the propositional non-propositional divide, right? I suggest that this is a very interesting way, theoretically interesting way, to cut representational systems at joints. Okay, so I one of them built around operations, built around inseparable parts. The other one, by everyone's acknowledgement, inseparable parts. And it turns out that, you know, usually when we think about images, people who in the past have thought structurally about images have thought about their expressive limitations, right? They can't negate, they can't disjoin, you know, these kinds of sort of claims that you get about images. Notice also, I actually think this is true. I mean, here's a limitation, which I think is really interesting. You really can't depict something as scarlet without also depicting it as red, right? I mean, you can't depict something as scarlet and depict it as green unless it's a garish collection of parts, right? So the idea is supposed to be, once I've committed to with respect to scarlet, I've committed with respect to all of these other kinds of features. They can't come apart. I mean, linguistically, it's trivial to represent something as being scarlet and green all over if you want to do it. I just did, see? It's very easy to do it, right? We can do that. You can't really do that in the imagistic case, right? But also notice, and so this is sort of fun little spin toward the end. So I can't depict something as scarlet without also depicting it as red. But it's also true that something can't be scarlet without also being red. Okay, something can't be square without also being quadrilateral. And I actually think this is an expressive limitation on images, but it might capture part of what we have in mind when we say images. And now in this sort of modish way, re-present the world, right? Meaning what they're doing is giving us things that are, you know, broken up in the way that, you know, they're giving us contents that are articulate in the way that the world they're representing can be articulate. And in that sense, they make aspects of the world available to us in the way that they'd be available to us were we engaging with them more directly. And that's at least, you know, that's a thought. You might not like that. But like I said, you know, one thought about... one thing people have said about the images, they can't disjoin, they can't negate. Can they conjoin, right? I mean, this is, you know, an interesting question. We've got all these different pixels, I said, and the syntactic connection, the syntactic sort of rule is connecting. You can connect them. And if I had to give you a linguistic expression that would sort of give voice to what they're doing when they do that, I'd use and. I mean, if you gave me and, or, and not, I'm going to pick and, right? I mean, you know, what else am I going to do? It's not going to be or, right? Okay, so, and it's, what would not be? So the idea is, that's what I would do. Similarly, though, do I want to say of the pixel that represents, say, scarlet and red and being colored, right, all of those things, I have to use the English and, I mean, of course, right? And if you gave me a choice of connectors, I would pick the ampersand or the, you know, and, not or, okay? I don't know, does that really cap, does that mean that what we're doing there is genuine conjunction, right? I mean, no, they're inseparable parts. I mean, I don't know what we're doing. I mean, it's just that to give voice, and so there's this thought in the literature that, you know, there's a difference between describing a content and delivering it, right? Okay. And you know, Tim Crane says this, but other folks have said this too, that you know, and I think this, I hope, if you like what I've said about how images work, which is unlikely, I realize, but if you like what I've said about how images work, right, you might think this is a way of seeing how those two things can come apart. I mean, forced to linguistically express the content, I would say, yeah, it represents it as scarlet and red and colored. But that's such an odd thing to say. I mean, and there's no linguistic context in which I would ever say that. And it doesn't quite capture it, because the and is supposed to be doing things like, you know, it's contributing things like truth conditions, but I've already got scarlet, I've got red and color and all that stuff already, right? So it's just weird to use it there. I mean, I can, and that's what I wouldn't use or, right? But maybe that's just not even appropriate there, right? The content's just this more complex thing that it's hard to give voice to linguistically, right? Because it has a structure that's not in that sort of high bar sense propositional. At least that's the thought. Thank you very much for your attention.